the origin of confusion, I would say, it stretches way back to Genesis 3.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion.
Satan tried to inject falsehood into the true word that God had spoken. But in that little statement, did God actually say this? Suddenly we see this swirl of confusion coming into our world.
Learn more about Clearly Christian at issuesetc.org.
You know, man, in the old days, I always knew, like, you were going to do something, that you'd be all right. It's the first time I'm worried about you.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Okay.
Tell me something, girl.
Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Almost every single person has told me they liked the way I sounded, but that they didn't like the way I look.
I think you're beautiful.
I'm falling.
Hey.
What?
I just want to take another look at you.
In all the good times, I find myself.
That's a trailer for the movie A Star Is Born. If it sounds familiar, the title of that film, it's because this will be at least the fourth iteration of that film. Its story's changed a little bit, too, over those various iterations. This one stars Lady Gaga as the young woman who will become a star. We're also going to be reviewing a movie called The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, which turns out doesn't have a lot to do. It's kind of a cut-and-paste reconstruction or deconstruction of the classic Christmas tale, The Nutcracker, for film, courtesy of Disney. Pastor Ted Geese joins us to review these two movies. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
I believe you say that this film, A Star Is Born, is a remake of a remake of a remake, the fourth iteration of this story being told here. Does it have the fingerprints of 21st century progressivist America all over it?
I think, well, all over it. It has it in certain spots. And we'll talk about a specific incident of that in the film. An earlier version of it, I think the one that people are probably most familiar with, is the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version from 1976. And that one, too, had kind of like the fingerprints of its day on it as well. I think that, there's a wedding scene between Barbara Streisand's character and Kris Kristofferson's character. And that was very much, you know, kind of, quote unquote progressive of the time from the 1970s kind of way of doing it. These films all kind of shift with the time, because the first one came out in 1937, and it was about a young woman coming to Hollywood to be an actress. But then when we get to 1954 and you have the Judy Garland one with James Mason, it's not really so much only about being a film star. It suddenly it turns into a musical, and she's, you know, there's the singing is part of it, and then they shift gears again, and now it's musicians and not Hollywood actors in the same sort of way. So each iteration of it is picking some things up. Now there is a at the very beginning of the film, there's something that is set up that I think is the kind of thing that you're asking about. So this A Star Is Born, the new one, is with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And Lady Gaga is the up-and-coming singer, and in this case, Bradley Cooper is playing the kind of has-been, washed-up musician named Jack. And it starts with him, like a deeply alcoholic character, trying to find a place to drink, ends up in a transgender bar where they're having a bunch of people singing, and they're all like transgender people singing or whatever. Men dressed as women. And then Lady Gaga happens to be one of the people in the mix, and he sees her and hears her singing and stays around afterwards. So you have this white male who is a musician, and as he's waiting for Lady Gaga's character of Ali to kind of finish off getting ready to leave, some of the patrons, it's after hours, they want him to sing something for them. So he sings a song for them, just him and his guitar, and he sings this song where the lyrics are, "Maybe it's time to let the old ways die." So he's singing this, "Maybe it's time to let the old ways die," in a transgender bar, as a ballad almost towards a transgender guy who's there, but he's a white guy singing this song. So, you know, and then of course there's this moment where Lady Gaga's character of Ali has finally finished everything. She's coming to see him and she's standing on the side. And as the camera picks her up, it's a close-up shot, and you see the cross that she's wearing. So this is like in the first 15 minutes of the movie. And that's a pretty, like, that's a, you know, you may just kind of float past that in some ways, but that moment, like, they're talking about, I think, this is that progressive, quote-unquote, kind of notion that is being, you know, really baked in hard in this particular part early in the film.
What is the film about then? I mean, obviously, there's, if those familiar with the previous plots, does it change much from the Streisand, Chris Christopherson version?
It's been a long time since I saw that first one. Not the first one, but the previous one we were just talking about, the Christopherson Streisand one. But it more closely tracks with that one than with previous ones, in that it's the basic outline of the story. And when we went and saw it, I thought my wife knew the basic outline of the story, and she didn't know how it ended, and I hadn't prepped her for it, so she was a little bit, she found that to be a bit of a shock. But essentially what you have is you have kind of an actor or a musician who, in this case it's a musician, who is kind of on the way down in their career, who runs into somebody who has potential, and then they kind of help them along and they go on their way up, and then they kind of crisscross in the middle, and there's usually drugs and alcohol connected to all of that. And that's the case in this one as well. And they have it turns into a romantic relationship that then turns into a marriage. And there's always a scene where the young actress or young musician is getting a big award and gets like horribly embarrassed publicly by her husband, whose life is falling apart and who's like extraordinarily drunk. There's always that scene in all of these movies. And then the movie ends with the male lead, whose career is falling apart. He ends up committing suicide. And then there's the Chris Christopherson one. It's a little bit different because he's been drinking and he's not in a good condition, and he rides his motorcycle out. And I think and it's like a motorcycle accident. But in previous ones too, I think it was a suicide. And in this case, that's what you get is that. So they all have this kind of pattern that's in there. Tumultuous relationship, and it's a real drama, basically.
So let's talk about the issue of suicide at the end of the film. And how it's dealt with, is it romanticized to the point where people kind of walk away saying that wasn't a tragedy, that was kind of a relief, or wasn't that sweet? Sometimes that's how suicide is portrayed.
The whole film is pretty glossy, and, you know, it's got high production value. It's not like gritty in any way. It's not trying to be that. It's in that kind of way. I mean, like, it's shot really cleanly and everything. So in that kind of way, it doesn't make it really ugly, let's say, but there is extraordinarily ugly element of it, in that essentially there's a character who, this guy Rafi Garvin plays this character Rez Gavron, who is, he's essentially, he's the manager for Ali's character, Lady Gaga's character, and he comes to Jack, played by Bradley Cooper, who actually happens to be the director of this film and involved in the writing. He comes to the character of Jack and he says, "You're her problem. Like, it would be better if you weren't around." So he basically gives him the nudge, the push, and he knows that the guy's got problems, that he's been in alcohol rehab, and that there's been other, like, suicide related issues in there too. And the ugly part is that this guy knows that he's a fence that's falling down, and he just comes up and gives him a shove so that he would go do the thing. So it's couched in this kind of, like, Bradley Cooper's character of Jack is doing what he thinks is best for Lady Gaga's character of Ali. But had he gotten better advice from people, had he had a more sober, caring, actual loving people around him, then the odds of that happening would have been different. So the ugly part is the way in which it unfolds, and that makes it a tragic thing. And suicide is tragic every single time. It's not purely, like, quote unquote, heroic or romanticized. Like, you have this ugliness of this fellow who really pushes it, like, with him and pushes him in that direction.
So this is a musical, obviously, and as a musical, I mean, no one can doubt Lady Gaga's tremendous talent. There's just, it's just a voice that you hear once in a lifetime. Do they make good use of it? Is it a showcase for her as the Streisand one was during her ascendancy to stardom?
It's kind of interesting. I think probably Barbara Streisand maybe needed it more than Lady Gaga does. But Lady Gaga does a great job. And the thing is that the singing has to be good. And like you said, I mean, like, with her, it's going to be good. But really, for this to work, she has to be good at acting. And in this case, she pulls off a very good job in the acting department, too. Now, on the flip side of that, like, in order for this to work, then Bradley Cooper, who's not known to be a musician, also has to be convincing. And he does a very good job all around. Like, this is a big deal for him because it's acting, directing, you know, writing. It's the whole package, as it were. And he does a really good job in all areas of this film.
What are your concerns pastorally about viewing this film?
Well, did you ever see years ago that Leaving Las Vegas film?
Yes, but also vaguely remember it.
Yeah, that one is the one with Nicolas Cage in it. And it was a case where, you know, it's a character who is deeply alcoholic and goes to Las Vegas in order to drink himself to death. And then he, you know, ends up with this prostitute, fall in love, quote unquote, and it's extraordinarily dysfunctional. And it was a big love story. So I remember years ago going to see it, and I was really ticked off by the movie because, I mean, it's not that it wasn't well acted or well made, but I was ticked off at it because it was billed as a love story. But the only people that these people loved were themselves. So it was like a, you know, narcissistic love story. And, you know, this one, you know, it also had Elizabeth Shue in it. And this one's probably not as, like, narcissistic as that. But I don't think that it really glamorizes, like, alcohol abuse. But for people who are struggling with that, people who struggle with that in their families, you know, there may be parts of it that are a little too, depending on where you are with things, maybe too raw or too, may hit too close to home, may dredge up some stuff. So, I mean, like, the pastoral thoughts would be just, you know what you're getting into. If you don't know what you're getting into and you're just like, oh, Lady Gaga, and it's a musical, and you've never heard of any of these other films, and you don't know the layout of the land, you might get clocked, T-boned, not expecting it. So kind of have an idea of what you're getting into and be prepared for some, you know, feelings and emotions going along.
Was it worth remaking it for now the fourth time?
I think so. Like oftentimes these things, would maybe not have to be done. I mean, I guess it doesn't really have to be done, but I think that this is a superior product compared to previous versions. At this point, I don't think they need to make more of them. And like the other day we were talking about like the Halloween franchise and stuff like that, where they just keep churning these out. I mean, like there's a enough distance between these so that they do pick up a little bit of the time that they're in. So, I mean, the first one was 1937. The second one was 1954. The third one was 1976. This one's 2018. So it seems like an enduring story, and it's probably the kind of story that'll crop up in one way or another in the future.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movies A Star Is Born. When we come back, we'll turn to the holiday film, The Nutcracker in the Four Realms, talk about how much connection it may or may not have with the old story and the ballet by that name, The Nutcracker. Stay tuned. Is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
With religion in America continuing its historic decline over yet another year, many may wonder, how fares the LCMS? This November, the Lutheran Witness is once again shedding light on the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Find the latest on global mercy work, missions, membership statistics, schools, and more in this special edition. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world through a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, Gresham, Oregon. Bethlehem Lutheran, Fairborn, Ohio. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, St. Labore, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Calvary Lutheran, Ray, Colorado. And Trinity Lutheran, Savannah, Georgia. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
It's Christmas Eve. A time of mystery. Expectations. Who knows what might happen?
Well, the music is familiar, of course, and the story ought to be familiar. Those of us who were raised on this, a Christmas tradition of Tchaikovsky's A Nutcracker, which was simply a ballet version of a much older story. A simple story about a little girl and receives a nutcracker that comes to life and defeats a wicked mouse king, and then they're off to a, if I remember correctly, a kind of land filled with living dolls. So it's a fanciful child's tale. It's also a new movie from Disney, The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. That's the second movie we're going to be reviewing here with Pastor Ted Geese on this Friday afternoon. Ted, this film has familiar soundtrack, but does the story of The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, does it have a strong connection to the way most people know this story?
Okay, so that's a big can of worms. So, I mean, you get the Tchaikovsky music in there. You have some of the characters, the same characters again. They're sort of shuffled around, repurposed, and changed. This isn't just like The Nutcracker. This is the Nutcracker and the Four Realms. So essentially, I think what they're doing is they're skipping the origin story and just going straight into, you know, kind of a spin-off kind of a thing. Like, they're making their own thing here. As a result, I think that people who really have a strong recollection or love of the ballet, the Nutcracker, and know, like, every detail about it, may find this either a refreshing take on it, or they're going to be irritated that they've, you know, gone a bit further afield in this, particularly in that the title character of the Nutcracker isn't actually very important in the movie. Like, he's kind of demoted to a B-plot character in a way, or he's not the central character.
So what does the plot become in The Nutcracker and the Four Realms?
Well, it's really focused on the character of Clara, played by Mackenzie Foy. And again, I mean, there's echoes and similarities with the ballet. There's the themes of grief and self-discovery, I guess, because her mother has died in this film. Her mother has died, and her father, her sister, and her brother are kind of like dealing with Christmas without their mother. And the mother gives presents. She receives a present. Now, in the actual ballet, it's Dusselmeyer, the kind of magician, kind of godfather of Clara, that gives the gifts. But in this case, it's the mother. But the mother had a close relationship with this Dusselmeyer, played by Morgan Freeman. And the gift that she receives, this Clara, is this golden egg that requires a key to open it and a note from her mother that says, all that you need is inside. So she needs the key. She ends up going through kind of like a Narnia, not Narnia kind of, you know, into the woods kind of thing. And she winds up in this, the four realms of the Nutcracker world. And she needs the key. The key gets stolen. She needs to get the key back. She gets the key. She uses the key. Somebody else gets the key. The key gets used for something else. And you got all sorts of people like Helen Mirren in there as Mother Ginger, who's in one of the realms. And Keira Knightley is also in there as the Sugar Plum Fairy. And Richard E. Grant is there as the guy named Shiver. But some of these characters are not as important. Basically, Helen Mirren's character of Mother Ginger and the Sugar Plum Fairy, those are the major ones that she's dealing with, and she has to kind of deal with all this stuff. So that's kind of what's going on with it. It's not the ballet. Did you ever see the ballet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like, the Nutcracker ends up having to kind of go toe-to-toe with the Mouse King. But in this case, the Mouse King and the Nutcracker become friends. They're not... That isn't part of it. Sort of a thing. So they make some changes with all of what you would have normally associated it with a Nutcracker.
There's got to be a name for films that do this, that take this is an old story. This is a story that has inspired an awful lot of creativity, in particular Tchaikovsky and other things. You know, it's old German tale, but to take the elements of it, to lift them almost completely out of their context, and then to put them back together in an entirely new way. I mean, if we were talking about this as literature, we would say this is they have deconstructed it.
Yeah, I think this is a very postmodern approach to the story writing. It is a deconstruction, and it's a reassembly of pieces and parts. And it's done in a way that it shifts the focus off of the title character, the Nutcracker, onto Clara, the girl who is part of the ballet, like, but it just shifts gears and makes it more about that character and less about the other one. I guess this is a Disney product, okay? So you kind of have to think about some of the other things that they've been doing with Disney. For instance, the new Star Wars films, they made the central character a lady, so it's Rey as the central character. So this is kind of in the same vein as that. Now, Disney also did those Alice in Wonderland films, but Alice in Wonderland, the central character is Alice. So that's, you know, that you wouldn't even think of it in connection to this kind of a conversation because it didn't require, in the deconstruction, it didn't require the reassembly of parts to favor that character, which in this case it does.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We'll continue our review of the movie The Nutcracker and the Four Realms right after the break.
Real Reformation Radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are reviewing the movie The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Thanks to Jerome in Utah, Matthew in Indiana, and Robert in California for your generous year-end donations. We'll be sending you a recording of both of our 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. You can also receive an audio DVD or a thumb drive of almost 20 hours of preaching and teaching from our Making the Case conferences for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300 to Issues Etc. You can order online at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Ted, we were talking before the break about Disney's tendency to deconstruct these old stories, and I'm wondering about one that we reviewed recently, A Wrinkle in Time, that they did a little deconstruction on. If I'm not mistaken, the biggest thing they did was sanitize the story of all references to Christian ideas.
They did, but they did some reassembly and some deconstruction too. They had one character that was clearly in the book was a woman, and then was played by Zach Galifianakis as a guy. And so they were doing some of that kind of stuff with that film as well. And it was certainly sanitized. An interesting thing, you know, talking about the Alice in Wonderland one, I don't know if you remember, we did talk about Alice Through the Looking Glass. That was in 2016. It was like Alice was fighting against time to save the Mad Hatter, and played by Johnny Depp, and she was fighting against time, and time was Sacha Baron Cohen personifying time. But there was this thing that happened where at the very last moment, it looked like she was going to succeed in her attempt to stop everything and reverse time and make everything the way it should be. And then she rusted out and turned into rust, and her finger didn't quite go to touch the thing that it needed to touch. And then there was an external kind of hand of God moment where something outside of her fixed the problem, and then everything went the way it was supposed to. Well, this film has got like the exact mirror opposite of that, where that egg that she's given, she's told all that you need is inside. So she opens it and it's a music box, and she's kind of ticked because it doesn't have what she thought was going to be in there. There's no answers. But then there's a little part that swivels and it's a mirror, and she realizes that what her mother was trying to tell her is that all that she needed was inside the egg, and all that she needed was herself. You have it in you to fix your problems kind of movie. That's the central story here, is that you can fix your own problems. You can do it. You can be your own hero.
You also say that the film deals with perception of good and evil.
Well, yeah, because you start off the film, and even the trailers and everything are set in such a way that you expect that Helen Mirren's character is the bad one, Mother Ginger, and she's even kind of made to look like cracked porcelain, and she does have some kind of creepy henchmen and stuff like that, which, you know, for, hey, you know, small kids might not find this to be, you know, there may be kind of creepy moments in it, but it's designed in such a way that you think that these are the evil characters. And of course, the Sugar Plum Fairy, Keira Knightley's character, is the good person. But by the end of the film, it's all turned on its head. And what she thought was one way turns out to be the opposite. So this is the, you know, like not trusting your initial instincts or what you're looking at. Yeah, you're kind of, it's set for a twist, I guess. But, you know, it's such a contrast. It's not like these are ambiguous characters that you couldn't put your thumb on. This was like, clearly, these are supposed to be the villains. These are supposed to be the good guys. And then there's the switch.
What I'm wondering is whether or not Disney, given its kind of wholesale buying into and now turning around and peddling both postmodernism and, I think we could safely say, a less than subtle version of, they might call it girl power, but it's really feminism. Could Disney even tell the original story, which has a male character, the Nutcracker, fighting to defend this young girl and then eventually taking her off to this magical land? Can they even tell that? Does that story, do they even consider that story worth telling in with their postmodern sensibilities?
It's hard to say. I think there's kind of something that happened, and I didn't dig too deeply into it, but there are two directors for this film. So there's this Leslie Hellstrom and Joe Johnson. So I can't remember which one was which that started it out, but basically the one delivered, I think it's this Leslie Hellstrom who delivered a more, from what I understand, a more by the ballet version of the film. And that was not the final version of the film. So he was kind of set aside. He still gets director credit. But then they bring in this Joe Johnson guy who was involved in Captain America and October Sky and Jurassic Park 3 and The Rocketeer and, you know, Hidalgo and films like that. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And he kind of then makes adjustments. So now Disney has kind of done a lot of this in the last little while. Like they say, well, we're going to trust the director to kind of do this thing. And then they see the thing and they're like, well, I don't know if we like the thing because we want to make as much money as we humanly can. And we think that this is what we need to do that. So they did that with Rogue One. They made changes with who's involved in that. They also, it's been a thing that they've done. It's kind of been a more, so the question of like, can they even like just take something and just do it as it originally was? Can they have kind of fidelity to original source materials? I think the only way they can do it is if they think that it's going to make the money. I think that's the only way. And then I think maybe on top of that, whether or not it puts them on the quote unquote right side of history.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joey Pullman of The Federalist is with us on the other side of the break to talk about a Florida school district's transgender student policy.
The origin of confusion, I would say, it stretches way back to Genesis 3.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion.
Satan tried to inject falsehood into the true word that God had spoken. But in that little statement, did God actually say this? Suddenly we see this swirl of confusion coming into our world.
Learn more about Clearly Christian at issuesetc.org.
Are you in the market for a home, car, or student loan? Check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union. During November, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Christian Friends of New Americans. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. EmmanuelPress.us.